did you find this?
Kickers and fantasy football.
That's right. Craig is here, and I am a proponent of kickers and defenses in all formats of dynasty and redraft leagues. I am very opposed to everyone getting rid of kickers.
Campus to canned kickers.
I'm watching our podcast download rankings drop precipitously as Ryan says that. But hey, we all agreed off air. It's part of the game. It's part of the game. Like,
we love chaos.
Part of the game. Why can't it be? Why shouldn't it be part of fantasy football?
You don't like it, then whatever. But like, you got to do the whole thing, right? I don't know.
Right.
That's why I think more leagues should have IDP.
Right. As the Beastie Boys famously said, kick it.
I don't think most fantasy football players are like smart enough to add another element to the game, right? Like, everybody has this pseudo intellectual belief in themselves as they're the sharpest person in the room of reading data points. It's all chaos, but it's like you add another element of IDP, people are like, I got no fucking clue, dude.
Yeah. Uh huh.
You're going to get exposed.
We're all going to get exposed. And let's expose our friends, family, coworkers, unfortunate carriers on. This is episode 89 of TH Fantasy. We're creeping closer to triple digits, guys.
Yeah.
I'm Tony. Ryan's here. Shane's here. Craig's here. We got a long one today. We're doing the Raiders, the Raiders, the Ravens, and the Bears. So let's get started with our 89s.
Sweet. I'll do a quick shout out. I thought about doing Mike Ditka this week, but we all know who he is, and he kind of turned into a Republican asshole in his later life. So
big time. Do you know that he said that he takes the blame for Barack Obama becoming president?
He does?
Yeah,
why would he say that?
He said that he was gonna run against Obama for the Senate and in 2006, and since he chose not to, Obama won the Senate and then eventually became president, so he took responsibility for that.
Okay.
That man lives in a different reality than we all do.
Sure does.
So I decided to go in another direction and look at a couple other guys. So my first guy for this evening, by the way, we're back on Friday night, so it's ladies' night.
Let's always.
We're going to look at a player that was drafted in 2006. I don't remember if he's on a team currently, but he was last year. Let's talk about Mercedes Lewis.
Oh,
tight end famously with the Jaguars. He was on Green Bay the last couple years.
He is unsigned at this moment. I believe he's unsigned.
Okay.
He'll be a Jet soon.
He went to UCLA and famously played with Maurice Jones-Drew at UCLA, and I think that was part of the reason he got drafted on the first day. Obviously, he wasn't the first pick. Jacksonville picked Maurice Jones-Drew first. But he has the all-time record? Wow. This is not that great of a stat, but for UCLA tight ends, he had 1,571 yards receiving and 21 touchdowns in his collegiate career. And like I said, went on to be drafted by Jacksonville Jaguars. He made his NFL debut in week one of the 2006 season against the Pittsburgh Steelers in a rousing 9-0 victory. He recorded his first professional touchdown on a 1 yard reception from David Garrard in week 12 against the Buffalo Bills. So it took him 12 weeks to get his first touchdown.
Yeah, but that's the most Ryan touchdown you can right. possibly get.
I would have had him in DFS that week. he finished his rookie season with 3 starts in 15 appearances. He totaled only 13 receptions for 126 yards and 1 touchdown. But then his role expanded in the 2007 season. His numbers just keep going up. 391 yards in 2007, 2008. He actually started all 16 games, had 489 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then his numbers just keep going up. So in 2011, there was the NFL lockout. So the Jaguars placed him on the franchise tag in February. After a short holdout, he signed a 5-year contract worth about $35 million. He played in all the games that season for 460 yards. Trying to find his best season here.
Do you know that, while you're looking, did you know that the one of the best athletic profile comparisons between for Jelani Woods last year was Mercedes Lewis?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good comparison. Lewis is huge. He's like 6'6", 260, 270.
I think he's taller. I think he's like 6'8".
He's listed at 6'6". You could be right.
In cleats.
He's got that wrestling billing.
Oh, yeah, too tall.
Yeah. His best game looks like he had 4 receptions for 62 yards. And this was 2017. So, you know, 12 years after he was drafted. But the reason it's his best game is because he caught 3 touchdowns in the 44-7 victory over Baltimore Ravens.
Very nice.
Yep. He actually, that's right. In the AFC Championship loss to the New England Patriots in 2018, he recorded his first postseason touchdown from Blake Bortles.
Jags should have won that game, man.
Yeah, that was a good game.
They were up. They were up in the fourth quarter.
After that season, they released him, and Green Bay picked him up. And he pretty much didn't do a whole lot in Green Bay. But yeah, quick shout out to Mercedes Lewis.
There you go.
You know, one of those DFS, touchdown guys you had to be real accurate with.
Bargain basement.
That's right. He would probably have been only like 4,500.
There you go. Shane, what do you think? You want to go second or do you want a headline?
I got a shorty, so I'll go next.
Okay.
So I usually go, I go my sequence of events of picking a guy. It's cool name. And then I go to Wikipedia and go personal life or controversy. Cause I like the juice, right?
Yeah.
So this week is kind of a good amalgamation of both of them because he also had a wrestling name and we were talking about homicide the other week. So, my 89 of Brian Blades fits that.
Ooh,
both of that Venn diagram to make a perfect circle.
Wait. Before you go, can I guess his brother is Benny Blades, right?
I don't know. I have to look that up. I know I'm going to talk about his cousin though.
Oh, even better.
So Brian was part of the U with Michael Irvin in 87. Both would be drafted in 88. Blades, however, would be taken overall 49th to the Seahawks, where he would play all 11 years of his career. While in Seattle, Blades would play 4 seasons with over 1,000 receiving yards, making the Pro Bowl one time in 89, where he'd post 77 receptions for 1,063 yards and 5 touchdowns.
There we go.
Blades would finish his tenure in Seattle in career total with 581 catches, 7,620 yards, 34 touchdowns with a 13.1 yards per reception. So pretty decent numbers.
Yeah.
So Blades' last career year with the Seahawks and with 1,000 yards, sorry, not his last year with the Seahawks, the last year with 1,000 career yards was also the year he was charged for being criminally negligent with a firearm and charged with manslaughter.
Whoa.
So this is also a 4th of July reference because on July 5th, Brian called 911 saying, "I need you to come right now." And when the police dispatcher asked him what happened, he said he had gone to stop my brother from fighting with a girl and a gun went off and shot my cousin.
Whoa.
Holy crap.
So while I was doing like the timeline put together of this, I put together that Brian wasn't suspended at all during this time period, from arrest to trial to anything, which was like completely wild to me. And he actually signed a contract extension with Seattle in the spring of 96, months after his arrest, that was dependent upon if he was going to be in prison or not.
Jesus Christ.
Really?
So initially, Brian claimed no contest, and then 3 months later claimed to be not guilty, so the case would go to court. The prosecution claimed that Brian was the aggressor as he went and got his firearm after a shoving match occurred between him and his brother, where his cousin Chris was trying to play peacekeeper and was shot in a struggle trying to remove the gun from Brian's hands. So wrong place, wrong time for doing the right thing. So prosecutor Pete Magrino, we'll have to get our Italian audience to correct me on that pronunciation, pointed out for that the weapon to fire had to be loaded, a round had to be placed in the chamber, the safety had to be off, and the trigger had to be pulled. So they simulated an altercation in the courtroom with the fire weapon or the firearm, and it showed that the firearm did discharge accidentally consistently. So the jury would convict Brian with second-degree manslaughter based on Florida law, sentencing him to 5 years and 9 months in prison on June 14th, 1996. However, due to lack of convincing evidence that Brian acted negligently and recklessly, the judge overturned the sentence 3 days later and acquitted Brian of all charges.
What?
Holy crap.
Yep. So then he would go continue to play football for the Seattle Seahawks for like 3 more years.
Jesus Christ.
Damn.
And that's Brian Blades.
Wow. Holy shit. That escalated really quickly.
Yeah. So don't drink on 4th of July. That's for next year. Everybody, please.
No shit. All right. So I'll do one a little bit more lighthearted where we can all just kind of laugh at the Vikings. We're going to do the Herschel Walker trade. This is one of the most important trades in NFL history. So
really?
Oh, yeah, it's a big one today. And also, you know, since it's the Cowboys, it involves Jerry Jones. And since it involves Herschel Walker, it also involves Donald Trump. So Minnesota's trying to get over the top, all right? They've been in the NFC playoffs 2 years straight. They got beat by Washington in the NFC Championship in 1987. And in 1988, they lost to the 49ers in the divisional round. They were like, all right, we're a superstar running back away. So they made a power move and acquired Herschel Walker. Now, in 1989, this is a midseason trade, by the way. In 1989, Walker was a stud. He was in his fourth NFL season. He was in the Pro Bowl 2 years straight. And to be a Pro Bowler in the NFC in the 1980s, you're going against Walter Payton and Eric Dickerson. Just putting that out there. He had just come off a season where he was fifth in MVP voting. All right. In 88, his stat line was 361 carries, 1,514 rushing yards, 53 catches, 505 yards, and 7 touchdowns.
That's insane. Like, efficiency, not the greatest, but like, my God. Just pure volume.
Yep. So now we're in 1989, Dallas 0-5 through the first few weeks of the season. They were 3-13 the year before, and they did not have much going for them outside of, you know, in 88, it was Michael Irvin and Ken Norton, two rookies. The rookie at first overall pick in 1989, Troy Aikman, was not off to a great start with the worst roster in the league. So this is year one of Jimmy Jones coaching in Dallas. And the legend has it that he was on a jog that morning with his staff and openly discussed the possibility of a big trade to like shake things up.
This is what we do in Discord now.
Hey, let's just make some shit up. So according to legend, his original intention was to trade Michael Irvin to the Raiders. And Al Davis was like, hey, dude, that's a really stupid idea. And Johnson was like, okay, I won't do that.
Well, that was after he tore his ACL, right? That was the season where he didn't do much, right?
He tore his ACL his first year. This is year two.
Gotcha.
So Johnson realized during this conversation that his only true bargaining chip was Herschel Walker. The Cowboys let it be known that Walker was on the trade block, and the first team to reach out was the Giants. But the Cowboys were like, no, we're in the same division. Fuck you.
Four firsts.
Well, Walker wanted to go to the Giants because he had played in the USFL for the New Jersey Generals. So he played in that same stadium for the team that was owned by Donald Trump. The Falcons kicked the tires, but they didn't want to pay for Walker's inevitable contract extension. According to Jimmy Johnson, the Browns had made the best offer. Multiple first round picks, a player, and 3 second round picks. They had planned on taking the offer, but I know the trade, the dynasty trade degenerates are going to love this. They decided to just cold call other teams to see if they were interested on putting in a bid.
I love that strat.
Hey, do you want this guy? We're going to trade him. So Minnesota was in. The deal itself is wild, and it involves a player refusing to go to Dallas because of how bad they were, and then going to San Diego, which caused like a future reworking for some of the later player and draft picks that moved around in this. By the time this trade's over, guys, 18 players slash picks got moved.
My God, dude, what? That's like half a team.
Uh-huh. This is what Minnesota got. They got Herschel Walker, 2 third-round Cowboys picks, a 5th from the Chargers, and a 10th from the Cowboys. Dallas got 5 players from Minnesota: Jesse Solomon, David Howard, Isaac Holt, Alex Stewart, and Darren Nelson, who was the one that got traded to the Chargers. They also got Minnesota's 1st, 2nd, and 6th round pick in 1990. But this is where it gets nuts. Minnesota put conditional tags on all of those players that they sent to Dallas. They were all starters, and most of them were better than what Dallas had. If any of those guys got cut before February of the next year, Minnesota would instead give them a 1st or 2nd round pick because they didn't make the roster. Jones was like, I'm not going to start any of these guys. I'm going to cut them. And for some reason, the deal gets amended. This part makes no sense to me. I tried to find an explanation everywhere. But they just get those other picks later, too.
Fixes in, dude.
They just got it all. So here's who Dallas ended up getting in the final haul. They packaged their 2 first-round picks in 1990 to move up and get Emmett Smith. In 91, Dallas used their pick and Minnesota's pick to get defensive tackle Russell Maryland, who was a Pro Bowler. They used their 1992 draft capital to make trades all over the place. Ended up with cornerback Kevin Smith, who was their starting cornerback for all of their Super Bowl teams. When they moved into the 2nd in one of those drafts, they took Darren Woodson, who was a 5-time Pro Bowler and Cowboys Ring of Honor member at pick 37. The Vikings never advanced past the 1st round of the playoffs with Herschel Walker. And 5 of those players the Cowboys ended up selecting played important roles in all 3 of their Super Bowl wins, 4 of which were every down starters. Now, hilariously, when this trade went down, it was assumed that Minnesota was actually scamming Dallas.
Really?
Because people didn't value futures like they do now.
Different era of football. Now you can't even trade Dick for a running back, right? Throw him away. We'll sign him for $4,000 next week. Who cares?
Yep. So nowadays there's documentaries about this. This is known as the Great Trade Robbery, aka the biggest trade in NFL history, and my number 89.
Hell yeah.
18 guys. 18 fucking guys.
The New Orleans trade is 2nd, right?
We'll talk about that for my 99. Yes. Yes, we okay. will.
That's a Ricky Williams trade, right?
Sure is.
Okay. All right.
Let's see. To round it out, I want to talk about one last guy, wide receiver, who played 11 seasons in the NFL and to this day still has the NFL record of receiving yards per game. Someone you would never think.
Is this our last wide receiver?
For now,
yeah.
Okay.
Let's talk about Mr. Wes Chandler. All right.
Okay.
Played in the 70s and 80s. When he retired, he was 12th in NFL history in receiving yards and 13th in receptions. But that was in like 82 or 83. So obviously he's probably down the list now. Sure. But born in 56. He famously went to University of Florida. He was a Gator. He accepted an athletic scholarship to attend the University of Florida from 74 to 77. During his career, he caught 92 passes for 1,963 yards and a school record 22 touchdowns. Adding six more touchdowns on rushes and kick returns. He was a first-team All-SEC selection, first-team All-American, 76, 77. That year, he finished 10th in the balloting for the Heisman Trophy.
Okay.
He's widely considered to be one of the best all-around football players to ever play for the University of Florida. And he was inducted into the University of Florida's Hall of Fame in 1989. But in 78, the New Orleans Saints selected Chandler in the first round, the third pick overall. He played this for the Saints for four seasons from 78 to 81. He was selected to the Pro Bowl after his second season in the league after finishing with 1,069 yards and six touchdowns.
Okay.
Shana liked this after that season, for some reason, probably because they probably got a lot for him. He was traded to the San Diego Chargers to replace star receiver John Jefferson, who was traded to the Packers after a bitter contract holdout.
We're so fucking cheap.
In the opening round of the playoffs that year, in a game known as the Epic in Miami, he caught six passes for 106 yards and returned a 56-yard punt for a touchdown. In that game, Chargers won 41-38.
That's right. That game was like three overtimes or something like that, right?
Something like that. But the following season was his best, when he led the NFL with 1,032 receiving yards and nine touchdowns in a strike-shortened 1982 season. And here's where his NFL record is. Guess what his average yards per game was that year?
22.
No, his average yards receiving.
Per game. Like per game, not per catch.
Yeah, yeah. Average yards per game.
80? 90?
Keep going. It's over 100.
110?
120?
129 yards, and to this day, it's still the NFL record per game.
Wow. Holy shit.
Yep. Let's see, that year he also caught nine passes for 124 yards in a playoff win against the Pittsburgh Steelers. He represented the Chargers players in the Players Union, and many NFL players in that role were cut or traded after the 1987 NFL strike. After he was elected to the union's executive committee, Chandler was traded to the 49ers, with whom he finished out his career and retired in 1988. He had like tendonitis, and actually the 49ers went on to win the Super Bowl that season, but he didn't play. Yeah, he didn't play because of his injuries, and he was getting old. He's famously quoted as saying, my heart wasn't in it that year. It had nothing to do with being a quitter, but it was about real life decisions and my health.
Yeah, sometimes your body just falls apart.
Right. So through his 11 season career, he caught 559 passes for almost 9,000 yards and 56 touchdowns. He rushed for 84 yards, returned 48 kickoffs for 1,048 yards, and gained 428 yards on 77 punt returns. To amass 10,526 all-purpose yards.
Damn.
And as I said, in 88 when he retired, he ranked 12th in receiving yards and 13th in receptions. And actually in 2001, he was inducted into the Chargers Hall of Fame. He's not in the NFL Hall of Fame. After he was done, he moved to Dallas actually coached that for, let's see, 7 years in NFL Europe. He was the head coach of the Berlin Thunder in 99. He's also coached at the Central Florida in Orlando. And in 2012, he joined the California Golden Bears as their receivers coach.
I thought you were going to say receiver. I was like, dude, can't ever stop.
Back to school starring Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah. But that's Mr. Wes Chandler, someone who still holds an NFL record to this day with his receiving yards per game average of 129 yards.
That's awesome.
Which is also crazy, too, because like who's someone who put up 10,000 career all-purpose yards. That's a really high number, right? Who's someone who never gets any shine.
Sure, yeah.
Yep. Yep, just one of those like magical seasons.
Yep.
All right, so we'll take a break. We'll come back. We're going to Raiders Town. I'm
Raider Nation.
Yeah. Woo. All right. And goodbye. Hey, friends. Tony from TH Fantasy here with a quick programming note just to remind you what we're going to be doing going forward is we're going to be splitting the summer research episodes up into two smaller bits
for your listening enjoyment
because I don't know how many people have time to listen to 2 hours of football talk in their lives, not to mention just in one sitting. So what we'll be doing is we'll do our number of the week in our first episode, and our second episode will be the last two of our three team reviews for the week. Hopefully you guys enjoy. We put together a ton of research on them, and if you have anything you want to add or tell us that we're wrong about, please reach out. Just make sure you are subscribing and giving us money because that's really important. Thanks. We're back and it's Raiders Nation. So,
all right, let's get ready. Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say that, like, after looking at some of this stuff and reading about the Raiders, I'm wondering if maybe last year wasn't all Derek Carr's fault.
Yeah, probably not. It was his worst statistical year.
Josh McDaniels is really bad.
We're saving the marriage, boys.
Yeah, but he's got some
breaking up yet.
He's got some chemistry with Jimmy G from being in New England.
Yeah.
Although he famously never started under Tom Brady, but
correct.
We'll see. We'll see. Could translate into something. Most likely not. We're going to delve into the perils of football mediocrity or maybe even less than that coming soon here. So really quick, let's run down what they did in the draft really. It's kind of sad that, you know, their defense was really bad last year and they really didn't do too much to bolster that defense back up. Pick 7 overall. They got Tyree Wilson. That was probably their best thing that they could have done with the defense. But outside of that, they got a 6th round pick linebacker and a 5th round pick safety. But pick number 2, 35 overall, they got Michael Mayer. All right.
There we go.
You know, where they famously got, they ditched Waller. He's now a new New York Giant. And hopefully doesn't stay too healthy and we see some Bellinger action, but that's a personal wish of mine. But they also did pick up Hooper and
they got O.J. Howard.
Yeah, O.J. Howard. To kind of, and that may be good to kind of mentor Michael Mayer, but
he don't need it.
I think Michael Mayer is going to emerge by the end of the season as the tight end one. Actually, right now, Austin Hooper is listed as the tight end one, but
that's camp. Then it ends.
Right. But they like the Raiders pretty much gutted the team this year. That we lost Derek Carr. They lost Jared Stidham. They lost Mac Hollins. Darren Waller, Foster Moreau, who, shout out to Foster Moreau, is officially cleared of all cancer. So,
let's go, baby.
Great news for him. They got rid of 2 offensive tackles. They got rid of 1, 2, 3, 4 edge rushers. 3 defensive tackles.
They cut Leatherwood, right?
Yeah, he's on the Bears.
Yeah.
Because he was the guy that drafted in, what, 2020 as a first-round selection?
he was one of the guys they got with one of the picks the Bears traded to them for Khalil Mack.
Sure. So let's look at who they picked up. We got quarterback, new quarterback in town, Jimmy Garoppolo. They picked up a backup and for experience, Brian Hoyer, who, you know, most likely is going to start. They did draft Aiden O'Connell, who's got some decent stuff about him. But he's going to be down there until he gets some playing experience. They picked up Jacoby Myers, Philip Dorsett, Cam Sims, DeAndre Carter, Christian Wilkinson, OJ Howard, Austin Hooper. But they still didn't beat for the amount of defensemen that they dropped. They picked up like one or two fewer in that position. And it's, I think that's ultimately going to hurt them as their defense this year.
Yeah.
But let's start off. Let's look at Garoppolo. And like you said, I don't know if it was all Derek Carr or if it was Josh McDaniel and the play calling, but let's look at Derek Carr's numbers from last year. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to look at Derek Carr's numbers from last year and then compare them to Garoppolo's last 3 years. And we'll probably see, you know, that it's going to be a significant uptick at quarterback for the Raiders. Not super, you're not going from Carr to Brady, but the numbers, you know, are pretty good. Derek Carr's completion percentage last year was 60.8, and Jimmy Garoppolo's over his last 3 years was 68%.
Okay.
Very
nice.
Derek Carr's on target percentage was 71.8. Jimmy G actually is at 80.7 on target percentage. Derek Carr's touchdown percentage was 4.8. Jimmy G's was 5.1. They are actually tied at 2.8% for interceptions.
Okay.
Yards per average, Derek Carr's was 7. Garoppolo's was 8.4. Their yards after catch for completion rating, Carr's was 5. And Jimmy Garoppolo's was 6.7. And Carr's quarterback rating last year averaged 86.3. And Jimmy G's actually around 100 at 99.4. So if we take those numbers into effect, I know it's a new team, and Garoppolo playing with the 49ers kind of got, I don't want to say baby because of Shanahan's offense is just super run heavy, and they had a lot of really good weapons in San Francisco.
Yep.
So we may see a slight downtick, but I don't think it's going to go down to those Derek Carr numbers from last year. But you never know. Like I said, McDaniel's got experience coaching Garoppolo in New England, and it could make for an interesting season for him. So I ask you, Tony, Shane, Jimmy G or Derek Carr this year?
It's Derek Carr for me.
It's Derek Carr, yeah. Like, okay. Jimmy G failed his physical. Like, that's why they drafted O'Connell, because they're like, oh shit, we might not have a quarterback. And that's why his money got all kind of weird at a point.
True.
For me, it's because Jimmy G has only played one full season in his career.
Also, too, I think Jimmy G is just like the person I strive to be, right? Like, hot, does enough where the people around him carry him to victory and glory, and he just kind of doesn't give a shit anymore. He just gets paid. Like, he's got the easiest. What's his expectation this year? Don't collapse.
Yeah. He's a transition piece, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at his numbers from last year too, they're not that great.
Well, he was going to be gone.
He only had 2,233 yards, 10 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. That's not that great, but he's going to be in offense this year. That's going to potentially be more pass heavy than the Shanahan run offense. I know they have Josh Jacobs.
They're going to have to pass though. Those games are going to be so high scoring.
Yeah. But I don't think Josh Jacobs is going to have a year like he did last year.
No, there's no way.
Yeah, there's no way. That was his career year. Yeah, his completion rate last year was only 58.1.
At his best,
he only passed for over 300 yards in 5 contests, while failing to deliver more than 2 scores in any game.
Yeah.
Never had a game with more than 2 touchdowns.
So wait, so I got one for you. Last year in Vegas, Derek Carr had 30 passes that traveled 30 or more air yards down the field. In the last 3 seasons, Jimmy Garoppolo has 26 combined.
Wow.
Well, yeah, because so, when your team is just yak gods, right? You have Kittle, yeah. Debo, and Ayuk, get it to 8 yards, and then they'll figure it out. Don't yep. crush me, lineman. Thank you.
So yeah, during his time in the NFL, Garoppolo has played for 2 winning franchises, but he has only once in 2019 kept the starting job for an entire season.
Yeah, he's always getting hurt.
Yep.
Too many porn stars.
Yeah, he's got, like I said, he's got plenty of passing weapons now, but he's probably going to have a smaller window to throw the ball. Yeah, you're really only going to want him in like a super flex.
See, or, I have him as a quarterback 3 in super flex.
Yeah, he's an injury fill-in.
Yeah, he's like Baker Mayfield type shit.
Remember last year Baker Mayfield? That was a fun experience.
That was awesome.
If he gets over 3,000 yards, it's going to be a miracle, I think. And that's saying if he's not going to, I agree with Shane. We were talking off screen. He's not going to play all 17 games.
No,
I don't think so.
This is what has me scared with Devontae, right? Because like, if we're claiming Jimmy G's not going to throw for 3,000 yards, like that's a serious hemorrhaging of volume to the team, right? Even if they have to pass more.
Sure.
I have some good Devontae stuff. Rest easy, my friend.
All right, because I'm reading the Warren Sharp part about how they gave up 5 games by 7-point leads, and yep. they led by double digits in 5 games last year, and they lost 4 of 5 of them.
Terrible.
So yeah, let's look at Josh Jacobs really quick, and then we can go on to Devontae Adams. 2021, let's see. He had 1,100. What is it? No, sorry, that's 2021. Yeah, last year he had 393 touches. That's 23 touches per game. That's crazy. He had combined yards 2,053, 12 touchdowns, 50 catches. Ranking him 3rd in PPR formats, around 330 points, depending on your scoring. He gained more than 100 rushing yards in 6 matchups. His best game was 33 for 229 and 2 touchdowns.
Was that Seattle?
I don't have the dates.
I think that was likely, it's the Chargers.
Yeah. So, like I said earlier, we don't know yet if he's going to sign the franchise tag. But if he holds out, he's going to slide in a lot of drafts.
Just fucking pay him. Just fucking pay
right.
him.
They already had to pay him $4 million more than they had to. Because right. they're stupid.
Yes.
His current ADP is right around the 6th running back. Somewhere around 22 to 25 pick, you know.
Yeah, he's okay. Mid-second.
He's only 25. So the
is he really? That's crazy.
Yeah. So Vegas would be stupid not to re-sign him. He could be in for another 300 plus touch year, maybe 1,400 yards. But like I said earlier, he's not gonna. I don't think he's gonna come close. Maybe he's in to 1,500 to 1,700 all-purpose yard, but I don't think he's going to get over 2,000 like last year. And honestly, until he signs that franchise tag, I'm going to steer away from him in a lot of best ball and stuff like that for now. But hopefully it happens soon.
So right now, Saquon or Josh Jacobs? Similar situation, right?
Yeah, right?
Saquon.
Yeah, I think I like Saquon. New York's going to be super run heavy.
One of the things that really caught my eye with Jacobs was, if you'll recall, Vegas benched Derek Carr for the last two games of the season last year. And I looked at Jacobs' rushing performance in games with Carr versus the two games where Jared Stidham played. And sure, one was against San Francisco, but like, if Jimmy G goes out, I foresee a lot of 17 rushes for 46 yards type game.
Sure.
Because
sucks.
Because like, well, like Brian Hoyer and Aiden O'Connell, you're going to load the box up on defense and just be like, run.
Yeah.
It's all you got. So like, it's weird to be like, yo, I'm hesitant on a running back because of his quarterback's health stability. Like, but I don't want that at in the late or mid, you know, second, early third. Like, I don't want that risk personally.
Right. I don't think that's weird though. I think that's a very, like, what we're trying to do with these exercises, connect all the dots of why we like guys and why we don't like guys, right? Because you could say, look at Josh Jacobs, like his last season was almost two seasons combined of what he put out, but we're being like, okay, here's the main reason why we don't want him. It's not even a contract issue. It's a matter of everybody around him just sucks. And the defenses are smart enough to understand, hey, that's the guy. Just shut him down. We win.
Right.
Right. So then behind Jacobs, it's kind of thin. They still have Zamir White, who showed a couple flashes last year, but ultimately only was involved in, let's see, 40 plays. For 70 yards on 17 carries.
Yeah, Josh Jacobs had 300 plus carries. Zeus White had 17.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see if Josh Jacobs gets hurt, if he can be the lead back. He could work as a goal line runner, but we'll see. They also have Amir Abdullah. Let's see.
Well, Josh Jacobs's rushing zone, he had 43 attempts in the red zone. So he had 12 inside the 5, 11 inside the 6 and 10, and 20 between 11 and 20. So he's like the guy in the red zone.
Yeah, sure, yeah. All right, let's move on to Devontae Adams.
Wait, are we not going to talk about Amir Abdullah? No, I'm kidding.
What do you want to say? They also have Brandon Bolden. But
I also wrote Amir Abdullah will catch two passes a game for 13 yards.
Okay.
Sick.
Yes. maybe a touchdown. Maybe you call that week where he gets that red zone pass catch touchdown.
There you go. All right. Talk to me about Devontae Adams.
Let's look at his year last year. He had a career high in targets, 180. His yards per catch was 15.2. And here's correlates with what Tony was talking about the deep ball with Carr versus Garoppolo. It's going to be tough for Garoppolo to get him because with Carr, let's see, he had 24 catches of 20 yards or more, 7 reaching, 40 or more. He had 7 games. Let's see. Where he had 10 for 141, 10 for 146, 9 for 126, 7 for 141, 8 for 177, and 7 for 153. Those are his best games. I mean, he was good in Green Bay, and we all worried about his translation over to the Raiders, and it showed that he was still a bomb-ass weapon. So
he was very frustrating in fantasy because I remember starting him in a couple leagues. I'm like, do something, and I'd be like 3/4 of 0 points, and then fourth quarter he's just put up 30 points.
Yeah, I didn't have any exposure to him last year because I was kind of on I was fading him because I was like, there's no way the Rodgers success is going to translate, but it kind of did.
You're his wrong.
His yards per reception spiked last year too. With Rodgers, it was 12.6 was 2021, and then he hit 15.2 in with the Raiders with Derek Carr.
Ryan, we had Carr and Adams stacked in the auction Superflex Experts League. Shit.
That's right.
I take it you guys didn't win that league based on how you guys forgot about it.
We did not.
Oops. I did.
Hey, man, when you draft Kyler Murray and Derek Carr as your quarterbacks, it's what happens.
Yep.
I think I had Tua, Baker Mayfield, and I might have had Trey Lance in a league. And that was like after week three, I was like, this shit don't matter. Not looking at this anymore.
Yep. Ryan, did you know Davante Adams has been a top 10 fantasy wide receiver every year since 2016?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Travis Kelce of wide receivers.
Uh-huh.
I mean, let's see. His four seasons in Green Bay, he had over 5,000 yards, 47 touchdowns, over 614 targets. Sorry, the exact number was 614, not over.
His catch rate is hilarious, though. 55.6 the year before, 77.8.
Yeah. I actually think that Jimmy G coming in here might be good for Adams because he's going to lose the deep ball, but then like the intermediate passes are going to be better.
Yes.
Sure, yeah.
Like, he had 40% of all of his team's intermediate targets, and he only caught 44% of them because almost 20% of those were uncatchable. So sure. Jimmy G's better in that area, but at the end of the day, man, Jimmy G, don't care. Brian Hoyer, don't care. Caked up rookie, doesn't matter. Adams is going to fucking kill it.
Okay, so you're not going to really let him drop in your rankings.
He had a 32.6% target share last year. It's only going to go higher.
He was a wide receiver, not like top tier wide receiver, but literally wide receiver 1, 2, or 3 in 6 out of 17 games last year.
That's crazy.
And he's just getting cheaper, right? He's like Derrick Henry, right? Like people, there's just more reason to fade him. And then he's just creeping lower and lower where it's like, if I'm at like 204 and I see Davante Adams there, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know where you guys would see him, but obviously he's going to be in your top wide receiver. So my either ors are probably null and void right now. It's probably going to be all Adams. So I ask you, Davante Adams or CeeDee Lamb?
That's close.
That's a good one.
Because CeeDee Lamb and it's like CeeDee Lamb, Diggs, and Adams are all right next to each other again.
Yep.
I think I go Adams just for ceiling, right? Like I bought CeeDee Lamb in Dynasty this year and I like him, but like the Mike McCarthy beating the drums, we're going to run the ball more. And like the OC being a little bit more run heavy does have me a little apprehensive about the volume that CeeDee Lamb's going to see. I mean, he might get more yak, but we know what Adams can do.
Right.
I'm going Adams.
So Davante Adams or Stephon Diggs?
Shane, you go first.
So I have this weird juju about Buffalo, right? I have this every year they keep faltering at the finish line, and every year it just becomes smaller and smaller. And I'm just like waiting for that rug to fall apart, not based on injury, but I just feel like something's going to happen and that team just collapses, right? And I don't know how much longer that magic and kind of stick together when they keep getting this close to the final thing. So I got a bad vibe on Buffalo. So I'm going to go, this is the year they win the Super Bowl because I say that. but I think I go Adams again. Like obviously Diggs is going to get his, but I just get a bad vibe from Buffalo this year.
Sure.
I'm going Diggs because I think Well, there's so much more touchdown insulation there on that offense, right? Like, I can expect Buffalo to score 2 offensive touchdowns a week, minimum. What?
Who has Buffalo in our grouping? Is that you?
I do, yeah. So I'm going Diggs because I think they score way more points than the Raiders.
Yeah, sure. Stephon Diggs was fourth overall with 23 red zone targets last year.
Right. So, like, you know, when you think about CeeDee Lamb, like, they brought in Brandon Cooks. They have a multitude of tight ends, and Dak loves to throw to tight ends in the red zone. If I'm thinking just, like, end zone targets, it's Diggs all day.
Adams was 22nd, or sorry, he was 5th with 22 and red zone targets.
Yeah, that's sick.
All right, this last one, I'm trying to mess with Shane's heart here, all right? Davante Adams or Keenan Allen?
It's Davante.
It's Davante.
I didn't know if he'd take the home team favorite.
I mean, at price, if Keenan Allen's in the fourth, I think I go Keenan Allen, right? Just because he's a wide receiver, top 15, where I can get him for a flex position compared to Davante Adams, where I'm spending either my wide receiver one or wide receiver two to be that position.
Sure. So
it just depends on the price for me. But yeah, in a vacuum, it's Adams.
Yep.
So moving on, Mike McDaniels brought in Jacoby Myers, another New England favorite of his. Actually, he wasn't too bad last year. You know, he was that guy we were always rooting for to catch the touchdown. During the week, because he had never caught one, and it was so awesome when he finally did.
Oh yeah,
they were up by like 41 points.
Yeah. So he had 83 catches, 866 yards, 126 targets. Surprisingly, with Mac Jones as his quarterback last year. Only got two touchdowns. But let's see. He never got over 100 yards at all. And actually, oh wow, he actually had two blank weeks too. He went 0 for 0 and 1 for 8. But there you go. That's Belichick's offense.
Was that the weather game?
Most likely. He caught 6 passes or more in 7 contests. He was actually 29th in wide receiver scoring. Wow.
That's a sleeper.
Right? He missed 3 games last year with a concussion and a shoulder injury. So it might actually be interesting with McDaniel to scheme some stuff for him, going off the fact that everyone's going to be all over Adams. So he could translate, I think, into more than 2 touchdowns maybe this year. Maybe he gets 4, maybe he gets 5.
Renfro's still there, right?
Yes, yep. Renfro is still there, yep.
Mac Hollins left like 90 outside targets on this team, yeah. And I think that's where Jacoby plays.
Yep. Yeah, Mac Hollins last year had 57 for 690 and 4 touchdowns.
Yep.
So I think this could translate into an interesting season for him. If the quarterback situation stays okay, maybe he can get closer to 1,000 yards. But who knows? Who knows with how much they're going to be going to Adams? And like Shane said, they still have Hunter Renfro, who, you know, didn't play a lot last year. But the year before that was a really good year for him. 103 catches for 1,038 yards. 9 touchdowns on 128 targets.
And he also like mentally shattered the Chargers when he crack blocked that fucking sneak play, and then we lost in the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah, the fake punt.
Yeah.
But something to remember with Renfro, because I fell into the draft Hunter Renfro trap last year in a couple of leagues. That 2021 breakout was pretty much after Gruden got fired for being a racist and Rich Bisaccia took over the team for the rest of the year. So that was like...
Yeah, his best weeks were from week 12 to 14.
And that was also when Waller was hurt too, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Yeah, weeks 12 to 14, he went 8 for 134, 9 for 102, and 13 for 117. He had a floor of 6 catches in 11 of his 18 starts. But yeah, who knows? He might be another trap this year, and I think Jacoby Myers is going to be better than him anyway.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything that indicates that McDaniel wants to use him like that, you know?
Right. They also brought in Keelan Cole.
Oh, great.
Yep.
Never even heard of that guy.
Other than that, you know, they got a bunch of scrubs. Philip Dorsett, Trey Tucker, DeAndre Carter, Cam Sims. It's not a bad wide receiver core. I do like the Adams and Myers duo.
Sure.
But if one of them gets hurt, it's going to be bad.
Yep.
Especially
Adams.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to the tight end position. As I said earlier, they did pick up Austin Hooper and OJ Howard. But the big sleeper this year is Michael Mayer. Let's look at some of his college stuff. He played 3 seasons at Notre Dame, 180 passes for over 2,000 yards on 18 touchdowns. And each year, his average depth of target or average catch went up 10.7, 11.8, and 12.1. He gained over 100 yards in 3 starts last year. Yeah, 8 for 103, 11 for 118, and 6 for 115. In my opinion, this guy's got the chance to be comparable to Gronk. I do like that comparison. And the good thing about this guy too is that he's really good at blocking. So he's going to have a lot of chances to be out on the field. He's not just a Kyle Pitts, who's super athletic and, you know, prized for his catching ability. He's just an all around good football tight end, and it's going to translate really well into the NFL for him as long as he's not injured.
100 vacated targets this year too.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, and with Waller gone and these other old tight ends that are there basically probably just to mentor him, he's going to be hopefully a really good breakout star, especially with Jimmy G not having the deep ball and having to throw a lot of 5 or 10 yard passes. He's going to be on a lot of those. I hope McDaniel schemes a lot of sneaky routes for him to kind of help, you know, when Devontae is constantly double covered and just, you know, needs to get out, maybe some tight end screens. I really have high hopes for Michael Mayer this year. So I ask you, gentlemen, Michael Mayer or Sam Laporta?
I mean, I think we've talked this talk like 5 times now, but for me, it's Michael Mayer.
So to me, it depends, right? If you ask me this right now, I'm saying Michael Mayer because I'm saying that with the assumption that the week one starter on the depth chart will be Michael Mayer. Sure. I think there's also a chance that he starts as the 2. And that then I go Laporta, but right now I'm going Mayer. And honestly,
is Laporta the 1 though, right now?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's in the same situation as Mayer, and that's why I did the either or because he's gonna be probably the number 1 tight end. Because
they had that one guy last year who scored like 3 touchdowns in a game. Starts with a Z, some Polish dude.
Oh, Zylstra.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
No, he's there. It's going to be Laporta, I think.
Right now, well, it says Brock Wright is number 1.
Interesting. And
that'll change. That'll change.
I think I go Mayer either way.
Michael Mayer or Luke Musgrave.
Yeah. Musgrave.
Really?
I know for sure he's their day 1 guy.
Okay.
That's a lot of faith, man. I mean, but I guess like, you're looking in the mystery box of Jordan Love versus Jimmy G, right?
Right.
So yeah, these I got a lot of high hopes for Michael Mayer this year, and hopefully it translates into something. Tony, another guy they also did pick up. I know he's a, and he's probably going to get a touchdown this year. One of your famous ex Chicago Bears, Jesper Horsted.
Jesper Horsted. Love me some Jesper Horsted. Terrible.
He's going to get a garbage touchdown.
He was a preseason darling.
So, yeah, that's the Raiders. I mean, oh, wait, Tony, you had some Carlson stats.
Yeah, you want to close on a Daniel Carlson stat?
Sure.
Okay. So the Raiders were bad in the red zone. They were terrible in all sorts of places. But one of the reasons why they performed better than expected was the fact that they were the only team in the league with more than 9 field goals of over 50 yards. They had 11.
Excellent.
That's Daniel Carlson, baby.
And he made all of them?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yep. All right. Is that it?
Yeah, overall, it's going to be a real crapshoot for the Raiders this year with all the additions and subtractions they made to the roster. I really hope that they don't take a dive, but it's more than likely going to happen because we all know Jimmy G is not going to play the whole year.
That's correct.
If he even starts the season. Your Las Vegas Raiders.
All right. Well, those are the Raiders.
Under, over, yes or no. Do the Raiders have a top 5 pick next year?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes.
Let's see. I think there's some potential in that. I think so.
Yep. All right. Well, let's not spend any more time on this depressing shit than we have to. We are going to end this episode here, and then we're going to come back at you with the Baltimore Ravens and the Chicago Bears. So thanks for listening to part one. We'll see you in part two. Or if you're just a Raiders fan, we won't see you in part two.
God rest your soul, man. Sorry.
Good night. Peace.
Okay, and who we got here?
I'm Bobby from Baltimore, Maryland. My first Raiders home game. Came to the black hole. Actually, tickets in the black hole. This stadium, you know, it might not have everything from other stadiums new, but I tell you what, you can feel the love. I mean, I'm from Baltimore, I've been to Ravens, I've been to Redskins, and Raiders fans all over, win or lose, you are a Raider. Win or lose, you are a Raider.